Well, if you'd like a title, how about What We Are Leaving Behind? What We Are Leaving Behind. You know, we sing one of the hymns, you know, oh, if they only had obeyed. You could almost feel God so wanting it, and yet they couldn't obey, because without God's Spirit, it's not possible. God wanted his people Israel to be an example for the rest of the world. That was the key point with that nation. And they were. They were a fantastic example. Unfortunately, they were an example of everything that's wrong and bad. And if you turn to Deuteronomy 4, let's start off in Deuteronomy 4. And verse 5. Behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments, even as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should do so in the land whether you go to possess it. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations. And you shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what nation is this so great, who has God so nigh unto them, as the eternal our God is in all things that we call upon him for? And what nation is this so great, that has statutes and judgments so righteous as all this law which I set before you this day? Well, the question is, why is the world today in the mess it's in? Because it's chaos out there. Due to sin, the blessings that they should have had were withheld for 2,520 years. I'd like to just go through a little bit of this. This is all old stuff, just to refresh our memory as to how and why we got to where we are today. Israel, 718 to 721 to 718, were attacked and taken into captivity. If you add 2,520 years to that, you get 1803. Now, that was the Louisiana Purchase, which encompassed 530 million acres of territory in North America that the United States purchased from France in 1803 for $15 million. That's less than 3 cents an acre. Now, that in itself is quite extraordinary. The United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland was a sovereign state established by the Act of Union in 1800 and merged with the kingdoms of Britain and Ireland, and that became what we call now as the UK. Now, here's the rub. Napoleon got this $15 million, and with that, he was going to destroy England. Unfortunately, it kind of went the other way, because the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805, he got beaten. He came back again, and finally he met his Waterloo. And after that, Britain took off. America took off. They put a railroad across the whole United States in, what, 18 months or something crazy? 3,000 miles? Britain walked into Africa and just took over nation after nation. It was an extraordinary period. Another interesting date, Judah, in 585, if you add the 2,520 years to that, that's when the British took over Palestine from the Turks. To the day. To the actual day. Mr. Armstrong, writing in an article, Superstition or Authority, can you prove it? He says, so when it comes to translating a certain prophesied date recorded in the Hebrew calendar, in this case the 24th day of the ninth month, in see Haggai 2:20, to a date in 1917 according to the Roman calendar, it takes some effort to figure. I found the Hebrew date corresponded to December the 9th, 1917, which was 2,520 years from the time Nebuchadnezzar accepted the formal surrender of the Jews in 604. The Turks surrendered to Palestine to the British on what date? He says, I've heard that it has been published that the date was December the 11th. December the 11th, I found, on further investigation, was merely the date on which General Allenby and his army made their triumphal march into the city of Jerusalem, but there was 2 days before, on December the 9th, that the Turks made the actual surrender. And if you recall, General Allenby rode a white horse, and when he pulled up outside the gates of Jerusalem, he dismounted, and his troops were horrified, because, you know, more vulnerable on the ground. And he said, no, there's only one person riding into this city on a white horse, and it's not me. So they had a form of godliness back then. The prophecy pertaining to the birthright tribe of Ephraim was fulfilled by the British down to the very day, December the 9th. It was on the equivalent date in 604, 2520 years before, 6 centuries before the birth of Christ. The Jews formally surrendered Jerusalem and Palestine to the Gentiles from Babylon. Another interesting date, 538, was the fall of Babylon. Interesting, that comes to 1983. And that's when the Poland and the Eastern Bloc joined Europe. See, all these things kind of tie up. Get to about 1850-ish, and we start the downward plunge in both Britain and America. Into what? Back into paganism, back into false gods. You know, nothing changed. 2520 years later, the people were different, but they weren't. They were the same. They had the same habits, the same ideas. Starting in 1800, God blessed Ephraim and Manasseh. Around 1850, 1870, spiritualism, demonism became the thing. Even Queen Victoria, having lost her husband, had seances in Buckingham Palace. And she spoke to, allegedly, her husband, which of course we know is a bunch of demonism. We got to 1914, and God started the corrective process. We had the First World War. Eventually, we won out, but at great cost. But we didn't get it. Our nations didn't get it. Mr. Armstrong said in a sermon he thought that World War I was the start of the end of this age. It's when God started correcting his people. I mean, for instance, the Battle of the Somme, which was fought from the 1st of July to the November the 1st in 1916, near the Somme River in France, on the first day alone, the British suffered more than 57,000 casualties. 57,000 on the first day. And this went on for months. Went on for months. The British would get out the trenches and they'd charge across the open land and the Germans would mow them down. And they'd blow the whistle and the first aid guys would go and collect all the bodies and the next day the Germans would have a go. And the British would mow them down. And this continued. I mean, this is about as dumb a war as you could ever think of. And it gives you some idea as to where the leadership is really coming. In this war, it's not physical. It simply isn't physical. It's too warped and twisted. By the time the offensive ended in November, the British had suffered around 420,000 casualties, the French about 200,000, and the Germans around about 465,000. That's a lot of people. That's over 1 million people in that one battle. And then to add insult to injury, after the war, they had the flu pandemic. That killed more people than the war. They reckoned that the death toll of the war was between 10 and 20 million. It's very difficult back then. We didn't have the internet and WhatsApp and all the other stuff. You know, it was a bit rough and ready, but between 10 and 20 million sounds a bit rough. And then for the flu, it was somewhere between 20 and 40 million. You guys, well, 20 million is a third of the British population. Through the 1920s and the 1930s, fewer people believed in God. A lot of people were put off by the war. How could there be a God when they allowed World War I? And again, and then we hit World War II. And again, God's people didn't get it. God pulled them through in the end. But, you know, by today, God has been totally removed from our society, forcibly. In America, in the courts, they used to have the Ten Commandments on the wall, all been ripped down. Yeah. God's law is being forgotten. Marriage is on the way out while over 1 million babies are killed every year, murdered, before they can even be born. That's cool, isn't it? How warped and twisted. In England, it's 200,000, but if you take the population of America, it's 330 million or thereabouts, and 660 million here, it's the same proportion. Quite amazing it's the same proportion. Just make a note of Ezekiel 7. Ezekiel 7:23, it says, make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes and the city is full of violence. Sound like the news we get every day? Our American brothers, they have guns and they, you know, they have these people going into malls and shooting up people or shooting people in schools. We're much more conservative over here. We can't afford guns. We just use knives, which are very much, it's just as effective. London's become a joke. You used to be able to walk London at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was at college back in the 60s. Now I wouldn't want to walk the street of London anytime. And it's random attacks. It doesn't seem to be even be planned. But there's a price to pay. Turn to Ezekiel 7. Let's just get to, let's continue on reading for that verse. Read again the verse I just read. The land, make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes and the city is full of violence. Verse 24. Wherefore I will bring the worst of the heathen, and they shall possess their houses. I also will make the pomp of the strong to cease, and their holy places to be defiled. Destruction comes, and they seek peace, and there shan't be any. There will be none. Fast forward 90 years. From the First World War, 1919 to 2009. What happens? 90 years to the virtue of the day. The American people made one of the biggest mistakes that they've ever made in history. They elected a non-Israelite as their president. They elected a Gentile as their president. Now that is totally contrary to the law of God. Turn back to Deuteronomy 17. Deuteronomy 17. I mean, people look at this and say, well, Deuteronomy, what's that got to do with today? You know what? It's got a lot to do with today. These were commandments to God's people. Deuteronomy 17, verse 14. And when you are come into the land, which the Eternal your God has given you, and shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and shall say, I will set a king over me, like as all the nations that are about me. Yeah, that's a prophecy at the time of Samuel, isn't it? Now, thou shalt in any wise set a king over thee, whom the Lord your God shall choose. One from among your brethren shall be set over you, a king over you. Thou mayest not set a stranger over you that is not your brother. That's pretty clear. No Gentile, no foreigner, no non-Israelite of any shape or size can ever rule. But they did that. In 2009, President Obama took office as a self-described free advocate of gay rights. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Pride Month 2009 by the President of the United States of America, a proclamation. And he proclaimed that was a public holiday or a month, and you all get on to whatever you're doing. May 2012, soon after Vice President Joe Biden set the example, President Obama endorsed gay marriage. Here's a lot of parallels we're going to see here. What happened in Britain around about the same time? We got a new Prime Minister, Mr. David Cameron. Former Tory Prime Minister David Cameron says he has absolutely no regrets about introducing same-sex marriage in England and Wales, which he pushed through Parliament without a mandate. And for those of you who don't understand, in Britain, we have the Queen's Speech, where the government lays out its plans for the year. That's what they stick to. They've got to stick to what's in that speech. I mean, they wrote the speech anyway. They get a mandate to do all those things. This was not in the Queen's speech. This was the Prime Minister going off, and of course it appeased everybody, and everybody thought, oh, well, don't make waves. Don't make waves. Yeah. In an extract from his forthcoming book, For the Record, published in The Times, Cameron calls introducing same-sex marriage to the UK as one of the things of which I am the most proud. Disgusting. Equal marriage was one of the most contentious, hard-fought and divisive issues during my time as Prime Minister, Cameron said. Legislation to allow same-sex marriage in England and Wales was passed by the Parliament of the United Kingdom in July 2013 and came into force on the 13th of March 2014, and the first same-sex marriage took place on the 29th of March, same year. 100 years from the start of World War One. I point out here, it's very interesting. If you go back and check the beginning of Isaiah, for instance, it says Isaiah did his work in the time of these kings, lists a whole lot of kings. And you go through quite a few of the prophets and it tells you when they worked. Now, before the fall of Israel, you have Isaiah and one or two others, and they were witnessing for between 70 and 90 years before Israel actually went into captivity. And when you come to Judah, that was Jeremiah, right? Again, that witness went out for around about 70 to 90 years. And we're in the same sort of boat now. It's just interesting. God is very patient, waiting for people to change. But you know what? He knows they're not going to change because without his spirit, they can't obey him. Now, to speak out against what God calls sin is to be branded hate speech. That's the problem. What I've just said there, somebody could take offense to. Upset them because they're little snowflakes and they melt the minute you look at them. And it's a big problem. It is really, really becoming a major problem. Unfortunately, we're stuck with the law of God and that's what we stick to. If they don't like it, well, it's tough. It's tough. The Bible tells of the end time attitude that these people are stubborn rebels who refuse to pay attention in any way, shape or form to God and his way of life. Turn to Isaiah 30. What's amazing, you know, you read these things now and they are so real because you can virtually go onto the church website, onto a news section and pick out the articles. And just as a matter of interest, that's been going now for way over 10 years. We have got something like 35,000 news articles, which you can go on there and search. It's almost like a history book. Isaiah 30 verse 10. They tell the seers, stop seeing visions. They tell the prophets, don't tell us what is right. Tell us nice things. Tell us lies. Forget all this gloom. Get off your narrow path. Stop telling us about your Holy One of Israel. Sound familiar? This is the reply of the Holy One of Israel. Because you despise what I tell you and trust instead in oppression and lies, calamity will come upon you suddenly like a bulging wall that bursts and falls. In an instant, it will collapse and come crashing down. You will be smashed like a piece of pottery, shattered so completely there won't be a piece big enough to carry coals for a fireplace or a little water from the well. This is what the Sovereign Lord, the Holy One of Israel, says. Only in returning to me and resting in me will you be saved. In quietness and confidence is your strength, but you would have none of it. You would have none of it. They don't want it. So, the end of the age is upon us. Now turn to Matthew 24, verse 3. If you would. Like I say, when you read the news and you read the Bible, the two are just meshed together now on a daily basis. Matthew 24, verse 3. And as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us what shall these things be and what shall be the sign of your coming at the end of the world? And Jesus answered and said, the first thing he said, what was it? Take heed that no man deceive you. And what do we have today? We have fake news. It's all deception. Some of it is so stupid, and yet people believe it because, after all, the media don't tell lies, do they? I'll tell you what, the media don't know what the word truth means anymore. Deception in every walk of life. Oh, he's talking more in here about religious deception. And, of course, the Pope came out yesterday and announced to the world that when Jesus Christ was on the earth, he was not God. He's a mere man. Deception, false news, is a major problem today. Here's where the problems really come from. This is something we must not forget. We are going to go into difficult times. We're going to see really crazy things happening. And we're going to scratch our heads. And this is the answer. Ephesians 6, verse 12. This is what we've got to keep in mind all the time. And you know this scripture well. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness or wicked spirits in high places. There is the problem. The problem is spiritual. We neglect the spirit world. It's dangerous. We've got to understand what more about the spirit world. You remember back when in Daniel's time, when Gabriel came to him and he says, I got withheld by the prince of Persia. And I had to get, I've gone blank, the other archangel to come. And yeah, Michael. Had to get Michael to help me. Now, how do they fight these people, these beings? Obviously, they can't shoot each other. They can't kill each other. So it's some form of restraint. some form of restraint, maybe. But this thing, and then when Gabriel went, he said, I've got to go because the Prince of Grecia and so on is coming. He was talking about the head of empires. The spirit beings control. The evil spirit beings control. That's why you have a prime minister that gets in and declares same-sex marriage, which is totally contrary to the law of God. That's why American voted in a president that was not an American. In fact, he wasn't even an American. What we gather, looks like he was a Kenyan. At least he came from the British Empire, I suppose we could say that. Right, this is the world we're leaving behind. We're about to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles, which pictures the 1,000-year millennial rule of Jesus Christ on the earth. Let's just have a look now at some of the recent news articles. I'm not going to go back 10 years. This sounds like an auction, you know. I'm not going to go back 8 years, not 7 years, not 6 years, not 5 years, 3 years, 2 years. Just the last few weeks, right? Just the last few weeks. And take note of what's happening and see the work of something extra human, something spiritual, because you see the same things happening in America as are happening here in Britain. This one is the coup has begun. It says, you know, I think there are no coincidences in politics. Everything happens on a particular schedule. So when I see a day as crazy as today, I have to ask the question, why? Why now? Looking at the headlines, you'll see what I'm talking about. All these things happened since I woke up on 7:30 a.m. Tuesday in Florida. This is the going back to the 24th of this last month, a couple of weeks ago. And here's the headlines, this man points out. The British Supreme Court just abrogated unprecedented power to itself by inserting itself into a dispute between the government and parliament. They just created the law, made something completely illegal, and then stomped on the government. So well, you can't do this. They have to make a law to do it. But who are they? Who are they? You see, the people in the Supreme Court, these judges were helping to lay out the Maastricht Treaty, which is the thing that guides the whole of Europe today. So they don't want to leave. They don't want Britain to leave. But the British people voted. The majority was something like 1.5 million. I mean, it's still a small majority. The Democrats have announced they will pursue impeachment charges against President Trump because an unverified hearsay whistleblower made a complaint about a phone call between Trump and the UK president. Hearsay. Gossip. And yet they want to impeach him. Bitcoin hash rate mysteriously flash crashed more than 40%, presaging a massive $1,500 drop in price. I haven't a clue about Bitcoin. I know it's something to do with it's a technical currency, but it's probably got as much worth as the paper stuff we have, as you'll see later. Donald Trump delivered a blistering critique of socialism at the United Nations General Assembly. Too bad he's nearly as bad as the ones he's fighting on the far left. And this is the problem. You can't get anybody who's going down the middle of the road. It says, this feels to me like a multi-level coup against those who dare to stand athwart the global power structure. What this man's actually saying is that there is a cabal of bankers, primarily, who run the world. Now, we've been saying this for years, and slowly the truth is coming out, right? If you take all the debt of all the nations on the planet Earth today, it comes out something like $240 trillion. $240 trillion. At even 1% interest, that's a lot of money on the usury. Who's getting that money? Who's getting that money? That's your question. It says the not-so-subtle message is, from these people who control everything, we own you, we are in control, and always will be. I think it was one of the Rothschilds once said, he said, I don't care who's in the government. The people who control the country are the people who control the flow of money, and I control the flow of money. Quite open about it. But people laugh it off and say, oh, it's some kind of nutter. Your champions will be harassed until they are completely neutered and bereft of any ability to implement the changes you want. Yeah, Britain wants out of Europe. And everything is being done to stop it. It's a coup. That's a coup. When one group of people illegally tries to take over the direction the country's going in, is a coup. And he says, it's a coup, folks, and the full court presses on this coup for your sanity and to radicalize you into violence. They are daring you, daring us to strike back here so that they can be justified in going on full lockdown and cancel future elections. In other words, they're trying to incite the people to violence so they can create martial law and take over the country. Do you think that couldn't happen in America? Oh, don't be so sure. Breaking the compact between rulers and the ruled sets a dangerous precedent for reciprocal violence, because overthrowing a president for doing his job and destroying a government to nullify a democratic referendum are points of no return. That's where we've come. You know, particularly in the States, I mean, the elections have always been muckraking exercises. But you know, when the result was declared, that was it. They went back in, they got the get going, and they put forward a series of laws they wanted to bring in. And there was a bit of argy-bargy, but basically, there was support for the government of the day. Not now. You know, when a comedian gets up with an effigy of the sawn-off head of President Trump and makes a joke out of it, I'm telling you, the country's in trouble. The country's in real trouble. He actually mentions this in his article, is that the image you hold in your head of your country is not the reality of the one you live in. Yeah, you think you're in the land of the free and the home of the brave? Check the news. Check what's actually happening in real time. And it's interesting. If you turn to Revelation 18. Revelation 18, verse 11. Rome, Babylon, is destroyed. Who is standing on this ocean shore, looking across the water at Rome and mourning the loss? Merchants. The wheeler dealers, the bankers, they're the people who control the world. For years, America has looked at the Fed. The Federal Reserve Bank. It's not federal, and it's not a reserve. It's a European bank called the Bank of International Settlements, and the headquarters is in Switzerland. And the American people are paying taxes to that bank. And when the trouble is the country runs out of money, the bank just prints some more. The merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buys their merchandise. And note the verse in verse 13, and slaves and the souls of men. You know, trade in body parts today? Stem Express, chief executive officer, admits selling babies' hearts and intact babies' heads. Huh? Do you want a sign cry? Take this to God. Ask him, how long are you going to put up with this? How long? How long are we going to put up with reading this rubbish? Essentially admitted in court that their biotech company, her biotech, this is a woman who's designed to produce children, by the way, supplies beating hearts and fetal heads to medical researchers. She also admitted, we'll leave the rest of it. The rest of it's too disgusting. That's going on today in America, and it's going on today in Britain. And remember that all those babies are potential sons of God. That's scary. America is being destroyed from within by the media. Who owns the media? I'm afraid you keep going back to the same people. Impeach the president. Virginia college students insisted on camera that President Donald Trump should be impeached, but couldn't give one reason as to why he should be impeached. And very probably couldn't spell impeached either. But the media say, impeach the president. Of course, the media can't be wrong, can they? President Trump. Fake news is too mild a word. He says the media is corrupt. You know what? He's bang on. U.S. President Donald Trump hit back at the dishonest and corrupt media over reports claiming he wanted an alligator-filled moat, electric fence, and other death traps for migrants built into the Mexican border wall. You know, it's laughable at one level, but you know what? The average American will believe this. Not? The ones that hate Trump will believe this. He says, I don't even use fake news anymore. I call the fake news now corrupt news because fake isn't tough enough. He lectured reporters during an Oval Office press conference on Wednesday with Finnish president, I'm not even going to try pronouncing his name, slamming the crazy story that he had demanded all manner of medieval booby traps for the wall being constructed along the southern US border. It's also interesting that Democrats are opposing this wall, right? But when they were in power, they wanted the wall. See, you know, politics is anything you want to be, especially to hurt the guy who's actually in power. According to the Washington Post, highly reputable paper, Mr. Trump was screaming, ranting and raving for this border wall. I want a moat, and in that moat I want alligators and snakes. I want the wall to be a fence, and I want it to be electrified. And I want spikes on the top of it, so anyone that gets on it gets pierced through their skin. It's somewhat the way he said, skin-piercing spikes. Trump recited dramatically, adding parenthetically, the moat is not a word I generally use. He said, a total lie. It's totally corrupt reporting. But you know what? It's in the newspapers. And you can recant that the next day for all you work, but it's stuck in people's minds. You know why? Because the average person today does not read the article. They read the headline. One of the biggest problems I have putting getting the news up on our website is some of the headlines are like four lines long. Because the guy who's written the article knows full well that very few people will take the time to read the article. All they'll read is the headline. Impeach Trump. Yeah, it's a good idea. What's next? They don't read the fact that they haven't got a single charge against President Trump, by the way. Not one. Not one. The president singled out the Post for a special shaming, noting almost everything in the Washington Post does is fake. It's a fake newspaper. It's owned by a rich guy for the purposes of giving him power in Washington. But he had to go at the whole press corps. Here's another one. This is not impeachment. It's a coup. President Trump on Tuesday evening went all in, accused the deep state and Democratic politicians of a coup intended to take away the power of the people. President Trump is correct. This is not impeachment. It is a coup. It's a smaller group of people trying to take over the government of the United States. He says the bottom line, he says, the Democrats have yet to name a crime that President Trump committed, which is further proof that this is indeed a coup. There's an article here on October the 7th. We live at a time when evil is called good and good is called evil. Sound familiar? And just about every form of human degradation that you could possibly imagine is absolutely exploding in our society. We have completely rejected all the values that this nation was founded upon. We have embarked on wickedness on an industrial scale, and the blood of millions upon millions of our victims cries out to us from the ground. And those who would dare to warn us to turn from our evil ways are some of the most hated members of our society. That's written by an American in America. What can you say? This is in the last couple of weeks. And if I go back in the records, I could have hundreds of articles that point out the same basic thing. All right, let's get on to the old UK here. 2016, the then Prime Minister, Mr. David Cameron, called for a referendum. Should Britain stay in Europe or leave? Yes, it's a yes or no question. The UK voted to leave the EU, 52% to 48%. The actual majority in numbers was about 1.5 million. The government was so confident of winning, they had no plan B. They did not expect people to say out. The result's been pure chaos. Now the Supreme Court gets involved. The United Kingdom's Supreme Court ruled illegal a parliamentary tactic used by Boris Johnson to ensure that Brexit would be carried out on October the 31st, more than 6 months after Brexit was supposed to take effect. At the same time, bizarrely, Johnson's move in Parliament has been credited by being undemocratic or even a coup. Same tactic being used against President Trump. The opposition parties are accusing Mr. Johnson of a coup. But hang on, Mr. Johnson is carrying out the will of the people, which is what his job is. That's what a politician is supposed to do. Democratically, an answer was given, go do it. So who is mounting the coup? Well, the opposition is mounting the coup. And the opposition are so messed up and disunited, the whole thing has just descending into total chaos. And to cap it all, is now shut the door on an election. In other words, what they're saying is, you're not going to do this, you're not going to do that. So Mr. Johnson says, well, okay, we'll have an election. Oh, no, we can't have an election because we lose. They'll lose. The Labour Party at the moment, if they had an election, I think the Labour Party would be decimated. Absolutely decimated. They're even fighting among themselves. So they won't allow an election to get another, they won't allow another referendum. They've already got an answer. It's just a circle that keeps on going round and round. But this is a true tried tactic in European politics. Only votes that help to promote the EU position are allowed. Everything else is declared undemocratic or simply ignored. And if you don't get it right the first time, you get another vote. And you keep voting until they get the vote they want. Now, just keep in mind, this EU is the leadership, the people who make the rules, the people at the top, the Commission, are not elected by the people. They are totally unaccountable to the people. They are not a democracy in any shape or form. They are, in fact, a dictatorship. Interesting? Where's the beast going to come out of? It's going to come out the same area. It's going to come out the same area. The laws are already in place. Just as Hitler came in. Hitler came in. He was voted in. He didn't seize power. Once he got in power, he stabilized his power position. And he didn't like the communists, so... he arranged for a fire at the Reichstag and then blamed the communists, and then every communist was rounded up and what the Germans normally do with people they don't like, they just get rid of them. It's not a bad idea, you know, if you're fighting against somebody. You know, God used the same idea. He says, you go in that land and you wipe out the inhabitants. Jericho, man, woman, child, donkey, goat, yeah, donkey as well. Yeah, wipe them out. Every last one of them. Do you know why? You won't have any more problems with them. Because when they're dead, they have any more effect on you. But of course we know they didn't do it. And to this day we have problems. So it's not a coup, not by Mr. Johnson, but by those who oppose Brexit. And Britain and America are supposed to be an example to the world. I'll tell you, some of those leaders in some of those African states particularly that we belittle because of their somewhat unorthodox politics must be laughing at this lot. And say, you know what, they're doing a better job than we are. Yet again, Bible prophecy makes this clear. Turn to Hosea chapter 7. It really is remarkable when you read some of these scriptures and you think, a few years ago you'd even say, oh yeah, okay, yeah. Now you look at it and you say, Hosea 7 verse 8, Ephraim, he has mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned. Now, in the old ovens, the fire was at the back or the side, and you'd put your bread or your cake in the oven, and like halfway through or even less, you'd go in and you'd keep turning the cake. So it got equally heated all the way around and cooked all the way through. But Ephraim's been just left there. So the one end of the cake's burnt and inedible, and the other bit isn't cooked. So that's not edible either. Strangers have devoured his strength, and he knows it not. Yea, grey hairs are here and there upon him, yet he knows it not. London, our capital city in this country, more than 50% of the population are not British in origin. More than 50%. I suppose I could say you walk down the street and you see very few white faces, but oh, that's a racist remark, isn't it? A racist remark in our own country. And the pride of Israel testifies to his face, and they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him in all this. You've only got to listen to some of the stuff that comes out of the Archbishop of Canterbury to realize that this is a businessman, not a religious man. Ephraim also is like a silly dove without heart. They call to Egypt, they go to Assyria. Where's Mr. Johnson just been? just been to Germany to discuss things with Angela Merkel. And I gather she kind of kicked him out and told him, no, we're not going to play ball. Which is amazing, because you know what? Germany stands to lose more than we do. You drive around this place, half the cars you see are German. Mercedes, BMW, Porsche, and Volkswagen, and so on. Germany stands to lose up to 730,000 jobs in their motor car industry. And add to that that President Trump is now slapping a tariff on German cars as well. Germany's hard-earned prosperity is going down the tubes. Remember what was written in the Plain Truth magazine way back in 1960-odd? When that's under threat, then the Nazis will rear their ugly head. But you know what? They're already there. The Nazis are the biggest opposition party in the German Bundeswehr. The parliament. They're the biggest opposition party. Nazis. And the Germans allow it. That should tell you something. Do you know the biggest mistake made after the Second World War? The Americans came up with the Marshall Plan. They should have used the Marshall Plan to rebuild Britain and France and the other Israelitish countries. But no, they left Britain staggering under an enormous debt, trying to rebuild a nation. Well, they went in and rebuilt Germany. So by 1960, we had the economic miracle in Germany, all their bright new shiny factories. And Britain was still struggling with stuff that survived the war. You see, if you want to knock an enemy, then you go in and you knock him hard. What they should have done is said to Germany, you're now going to be a farming nation. You can supply the rest of the country, the Europe, with food. You won't be allowed a knife with a point, and it mustn't be too sharp, because you might hurt somebody. No army, no navy, no air force, no police force. We'll take care of all that for you. You're never again going to rise up and fight anybody. And where's Germany today? We'll have a look at that in a minute. People should be quaking in their boots, but they don't care. Isaiah 3, verse 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of your paths. Perhaps you haven't thought of it like this before, but you know what? Most of the knife crime in London is committed by what God would consider children, people under the age of 20. Youths. Crime, it's gangs. People are getting frightened to walk the streets. Women rule over you. Who's giving Mr. Trump the uphill? Mrs. Nancy Pelosi. And there's a group of, I think, seven or eight other women that got together there. And they are behind much of this impeachment process. In England, we had Mrs. Theresa May, who took over the leadership of the Conservative Party as a Brexiteer. But she wasn't. She was very much a Remainer. And she squandered three whole years and left the mess. It's such a mess. And now they're trying to sort it out. And the Europeans they're not very happy, because obviously they want an answer to the situation. But there's your problem. Women were not designed to rule. They were designed as a helpmeet to their husband. And it's something we might be looking into in the future, because, you know, it's so important. It's not that one's better than the other. I tell you what, if a woman wants to be a man, she's not got much. You're missing out on something. They're both vitally important. Both vitally important. You know why? God made us what we are. He told us what we were supposed to do. And at the end of it, we're co-heirs together to God's kingdom. Yes, your wife will be God just the same as you are. And if she's been more overcoming than you are, she might be over you in authority. Interesting, isn't it? But we always use things for the wrong purpose. No matter what God has given us, we mess it up. Incredible. Europe. Mr. Farage. I don't know if you've been on the internet and watched it or listened and watched to his tirades against the EU. They are spectacular. This man is gifted. I mean, he can smile at you and just tear you to shreds. When Mr. Van Rompuy was the leader over there, there was a 20-minute altercation where he branded them as dictators. He told them, "You're unelected. Nobody wants you guys. You know, you what are you sitting there for?" Quite incredible. But he's got quite a bit of insight. He said, "The EU is building an empire. Why deny it? Why deny it?" Well, I'll tell you why. They don't want to push the nations of Europe too far because they're all independent nations. They've all got their own language. They've all got their own heritage. They've all got their own hatreds. They've all got the memories of inter-European wars over the centuries. It's a mess. It's got to be united, and we'll cover that in a few minutes. Back in 1985, just before he died, Mr. Armstrong was inspired to write the following. "The European Parliament meets in Brussels and in Strasbourg, France, and in Luxembourg, with a staff working vigorously for a reunited Europe, working out a constitution for this coming third super world power. As the European Community's headquarters in Brussels, Belgium, a very large staff are working for a single united European currency, one united military force, and one economic structure. Do not discount the possibility that this resurrection of the medieval Roman Empire may start with some arrangement to reunite East and West Germany first." He wrote that in 1985. 1989, fait accompli. Look at when he wrote. This is what he warned would happen. A single united European currency. It's called a euro. It's been around now for, 19 years. 2000, I think it was the year. One united military force, well under construction, and openly admitted to being under construction now. It's been going on for several years quietly in the background. That's why we get all these stupid news articles. Oh, Germany's got 50 helicopters and only one of them's flying. Oh, our submarines are all in dry dock because they're not working. You know, we've got 120 jet fighters, 20 are airworthy, and 10 of them can only fly for 20 minutes, so they fall out of the sky. If you've been to Germany, people, you know one thing about Germany. Germany works. Germany works, and everything in Germany works. Excuse me. They like that. They make quality stuff. They've also got a large armament industry. And when the tram comes, they can well supply all their troops with guns that don't work and tanks that don't work and the wrong size shoes and so on. This is all in the press. It's all in our website. You can go look, check it up. Do you believe it? One economic structure, the Eurozone. They've got that. The reunification of East and West Germany. History. History. And you know what? To this day, people look back on that and they say, well, how did it happen? It happened because God wanted it to happen. There's no logical reason for it. There's no logical reason why the USSR suddenly collapsed in a pile over the weekend and suddenly we've got a new Russia. And yes, all the satellites can go and do their own thing. So they joined the EU, just as Mr. Armstrong predicted 10 years previously. But of course, Mr. Armstrong never got anything right, did he? According to some people. Check the facts, folks. Check the facts. Just 4 years after writing this down, the world was stunned when the Berlin Wall came down, and 1 year later, East and West Germany were reunited. And right now, the Euro army is well on the way to become a reality. And why do they want an army? They want to protect themselves from China, from Russia, and the United States of America. 70 years ago, we had the end of a war. Suddenly, America is now looked on as a threat. Incredible. Trade wars. US to hit EU with tariffs. This is again the 4th of the 10th, just the other day. The United States will impose 10% tariffs on aircraft and 25% on other industrial and agricultural products from the European Union as part of the World Trade Organization penalty award in the long-running aircraft subsidy case. An official from the U.S. Trade Representative said on Wednesday. In other words, the Boeing and the European lot that make the Airbus, there's been some finagling going on, governments have been giving them one subsidies to get the price down a little bit so they can get the business. But Boeing, of course, do the same thing. That's how business works today. It's just like that. Now Mr. Trump decided that the Americans are losing out and he's not having it. But you know he's right, because for years, for instance, it was India, I think it's India, if the Americans want to sell motorbikes in India, there's something like a 50% tariff on them or something. And yet the other way around, there's no tariff. In other words, the Indians can chuck as much stuff in America as they want. And this is the danger with trade wars. You know, you start putting a tariff on, the other country either accepts it or they reciprocate. And in this case, Europe's going to reciprocate. And then you'll have a full-blown trade war. And prices will go up and up and up and up and up. And people won't be able to buy the goods. Then you have a real war. That's what happened in the 1930s. Panic at the G7 as euro crisis looming. I've just checked the news just now. France, Poland, Spain, Italy, there's one other. They're all going to the EU and saying, we're not paying any more money into the EU. Because when Britain leaves, they use $9 billion a year. And somebody's got to get that $9 billion because they've just announced a new budget in the EU, which is more than $9 billion. Here's the problem with the EU. Their books have never balanced. They have never had an audit. Their books have never been signed off. Not once. Not once. There's so much corruption and graft going on. I remember talking to Mr. Forson. He was bemoaning the fact that in his country there was so much graft and corruption. And I said, well, you know, we've got the same here. I said, he says, we do it much better. That's the big difference. We do it much better than you. You guys are open about it. We cover it up nicely. Still the same problem. Eurozone is heading for an economic crisis far bigger than the 2011-2012 disaster, and the German Chancellor has been urged to drastically increase domestic spending to save the 19 EU member states from plunging into recession. The Eurozone is heading for a fresh crisis, according to economist Liam Halligan, as he warns that only Germany can save the monetary union from collapse. Think about it. We have that scripture that talks about these nations. These 10 nations give their power to the beast. Why? Because he's the only one that can stop the nations from collapsing. Over 50 years ago, this is Germany now. Over 50 years ago, in the 1963 article in the Praying Truth magazine, we all know we can almost pat this off, can't we? We've read it so many times. So long as present German prosperity continues, the Nazi takeover will not be possible. But should any severe threat to that hard-won prosperity come, the picture will change. Remember, and change violently. Remember, that's what happened in Germany. History repeats itself, they say, and your Bible predicts a great trade war between the burgeoning economic power in Europe and the United States. It predicts terrible financial collapse for this country, the United States. Make no mistake, Germany and all Europe would not escape unscathed in a hot trade war between the common market and the United States. Terrible economic disasters would result, and the result from such a disaster, a new Nazi Germany. This was in 1963. You need to be watching and keeping your eyes on developments in Europe as never before. You, at least, have been warned. How many took the warning? The trade wars have started. Germany's hard-won prosperity is under threat, and the Nazis are already back in the German parliament. Do we get it? We get it. I'm sure we do. We've been waiting for it for the last 50 years. That was written the year before I went to college, over 50 years ago. Now I'm sitting telling you about it. It's incredible. But it's happening right before our eyes, and the average Brit and the average American hasn't a clue. All they're interested in is, can they go to the pub for a drink tonight, and what's on the telly? Attitudes are also changing in Germany. Nearly 75 years after the World War II, the U.S.-German relationship isn't just moribund, it's on life support. At both the official and unofficial level, the foundation that supported the transatlantic alliance since the 1950s is crumbling. About 85% of Germans consider their country's relationship with the US to be bad or very bad. 85% of the Germans think that. According to a recent study, while a clear majority want Germany to distance itself from the US. In short, Germany is the biggest beneficiary of European integration. The EU supplies the democratic stability and economic certainty on which its prosperity has been built. No country has more to lose from a breakup. And there's your problem. That hard-earned prosperity is easing, oozing away. And the Germans, they're tight-fisted. They control their finances. They don't just print money willy-nilly. The European Parliament are doing it. Another interesting thing here, from prophecy. Germany in the Middle East. Where does Germany stand, do you reckon? Who does Germany really, really, really support? They make a pretense of supporting Israel. They're very sorry for what happened 70 years ago, you know. But what does the Bible say? Turn to Psalm 83. I'm actually reading this in the form of a question. This is not dogmatic. It's a possibly speculation, I would say, what you want to call it, and to make that clear. But let's see what the Bible actually says. Psalm 83, verse 3. They devise crafty schemes against your people. They conspired against your precious ones. Come, they say, let us wipe out Israel as a nation. We will destroy the very memory of its existence. Does that sound familiar? Have you not seen that in the news in the last couple of weeks? That's what the head of the Iranian army said. We now have the ability to completely wipe Israel off the map. Now, that's what we're going to do. And they could. They're not going to, I don't think they're going to be able to. But there could be a war. Yes, this is their unanimous decision. They signed a treaty as allies against you. The Edomites, the Ishmaelites, the Moabites, the Hagarites, a whole bunch of other ites, and the people of Philistinia and Tyre. Assyria, verse 8, Assyria has joined them too, and is called with it, and is allied with the descendants of Lot. And Lot is Jordan. And guess what? Did you know there was a German military base right now, in Jordan? Well, there is. So, you know, interesting that when this beast army goes charging on down into the Middle East, the two Turkeys that escape are Turkey and Jordan. It's interesting, but there isn't some. Could that be? Looks a bit like it to me. Germany has a military base in Jordan. German defense minister visits troop in Jordan and Iraq. Why do they have bases in Jordan and Iraq? Primarily aimed at stabilizing the affected states and societies to prevent danger to their own security and those of the European partner countries and to ensure a smooth supply of raw materials to create export opportunities for the German economy. That's what it's all about, folks. Oil. Germany hasn't got any. That's what they tried to do during the Second World War. They wanted to take over the oil fields. They need the oil. There's another one here on the end of the German-American affair. Just off a wide boulevard in a leafy West Berlin suburb, the US-German friendship is alive and well. Americans play football, sail, and dance with their German friends. This decades-old bond between the two countries is on full display. The trouble is, it's only a display. Opened in 1998, the Allied Museum, a free exhibition housed in an old U.S. Army theater, offers a window into what once was and is a welcome escape from what is. Nearly 75 years after the end of World War II, the German-U.S. relationship isn't just moribund, it's on life support. And, you know, people just do not want to know the Americans anymore. In fact, there's been statements sort of made that America's saying, well, you guys should pay for the 30,000 troops we've got in Europe. They're protecting you. And the Germans laugh and say, we don't want them. So watch. What are they going to do with those troops? There's some talk of putting them into Poland. There's some talk of moving them into Poland. Then who's going to defend Germany? Well, of course, the European army we don't all talk about. That's got helicopters and planes and submarines that don't work. Thank you. You hear that? That's our friends, the donkey. Their timing is impeccable. Impeccable. Israel must be wiped off the map. The commander of Iran's elite Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps said on Monday that destroying Israel was now an achievable goal. 4 decades on from Iran's Islamic Revolution, we have managed to obtain the capacity to destroy the imposter Zionist regime. This sinister regime must be wiped off the map, and this is no longer a dream but an achievable goal. They've got so many missiles now they can aim at Israel. I mean, remember how small Israel is. In South Africa, they've got a big game reserve called the Kruger National Park. You might have heard about it. You can take the whole bit of Israel down the end of the Mediterranean there. You can take that and dump it in the middle of this game reserve, and there's still land all the way around. It's really small. The Jews wanted to take over the Golan Heights because on those heights, you could just use a simple mortar and lob mortar shells down into Israel. It's so small. The whole place is tiny. Absolutely tiny. You know, during the wars down there, the fighter pilots would be taking pot shots at each other and turning around to get back to where they could join the and they'd probably go over 4 or 5 different countries. Another article here from the Foreign Affairs people. Middle East is more combustible now than ever. The war that now looms largest is a war nobody apparently wants. During his presidential campaign, Donald Trump railed against the United States' entanglement in the Middle East wars, and since assuming office, he has not changed his tune. Iran has no interest in a wide-ranging conflict. It knows it couldn't win. Not if everybody climbed in on they couldn't. Israel is satisfied with calibrated operations in Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, and Gaza, but fears a larger confrontation that could expose it to thousands of rockets. Saudi Arabia is determined to push back against Iran, but without confronting it militarily. Yet the conditions for an all-out war in the Middle East are riper now than at any other time in European history. It's chaos. You know, if you just think, who is really running all this? There's wicked spirits in high places. And what are they doing? They are preparing the world for the ultimate battle to fight Christ when he comes back. That's what they're preparing for. They're winding everybody up. There's no more love now between nations. It's hatred. It's, you know, I'll get you before you get me type thing. A conflict could break out in any one of a number of places for any one of a number of reasons. Consider the September 14 attack on Saudi Arabian oil facilities. It could theoretically have been perpetrated by the Hutus, a Yemeni rebel group, as part of their war with the kingdom. By Iran as a response to debilitating U.S. sanctions, or by an Iran-backed Shiite military in Iraq. If Washington decides to take military action against Tehran, this could turn prompt Iranian retaliation against United States Gulf allies, an attack by Hezbollah in Israel, or a Shiite militia operation against the U.S. personnel in Iraq. Just late yesterday, an Iranian oil tanker was hit by 2 missiles. Now, they could have been very big, because the thing's still floating. But it's spewing oil all over the place. And now Iran's upset because they've attacked one of our ships. But what have they been doing? They've been hijacking other people's ships. You know, it's all niggles, 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 niggles. What will cause a war will be something stupidly simple. That's the danger. It says, likewise, Israeli operations against Iranian allies anywhere in the Middle East could trigger a regional wide chain reaction, because any development anywhere in the region can have ripple effects everywhere. Narrowly containing a crisis is fast becoming an exercise in futility. It used to be that you could have a little mini war here, and that would be it. That would be sorted out, and like Kashmir, for instance. Yeah, it erupts over the years, and there's a little bit of a war, and a few people get killed, and the lines are drawn again, and the peace settles down, and eventually it erupts again, and so on. But not now. Now, Pakistan's saying, any more of this nonsense, we're going to attack India, we're going to nuke them. Now, you get a country with over 1 billion people, you start throwing nuclear weapons around? It doesn't bear thinking about. The groundwork is laid for a vast new conflict. The Middle East appears to be sliding into a war that may have already begun. At its center are arch rivals Saudi Arabia and Iran, their proxies, and US President Donald Trump. Regional stability hangs by a thread. The Middle East appears to be sliding into war, and it may even already start. It's a new kind of war, a 21st century conflict for which there is no formal declaration of war, no clear fronts, and a wide variety of battlefields. Chaos. It used to be a country would say, you've done this to us, we're now declaring war on you, like the Second World War. Germany invaded Poland. Britain had an agreement with Poland that they would protect her, so they then said right to Germany, well, we're declaring war on you. And everybody knew, and they knew where the battlefield was, and they knew it was involved. Not today. It's all airy and all over the place. And of course, to add insult to injury, you've got these wretched computer things where people can hack into this one and turn off somebody's power station and all sorts of things. It's getting crazy. Was it somebody hacked a fridge or something, or somebody's fridge hacked somebody else's car? I don't know. It's chaos. More than anything, it's a confusing war which nobody really has control, not even those who are ostensibly leading it. You see, Israel would love to attack Gaza because Gaza keeps on throwing rockets across. I mean, if Cuba was lobbing rockets across into Florida, there wouldn't be any problem in the American Parliament. They'd just go over there and flatten them. Yeah, one rocket would all it would take. But the Jews are supposed to put up with this day after day. They're not big rockets. But, you know, one lands on a house, it'd kill half a dozen people or whatever. And the Jews are supposed to put up with this, according to the other nations. Well, they're fed up. They want to go into Gaza. But the trouble is, they go into Gaza, then in the north, you've got Hezbollah in Lebanon, who've got allegedly 150,000 rockets all lined up to attack Israel. And they're supported by Iran. And so it gets very complicated. Iran is supported by Russia, and Israel is supported by America. So you see, everybody's involved. You see how quickly this thing can escalate. But you know what? Something big is going to happen to the USA. Because when you get to the end, they're not there. They're not a force. You think about it. 1290-day mark, 30 days before the tribulation starts, the European army goes all the way down, takes over virtually the whole Middle East, takes over Israel, stops the daily sacrifices. No opposition. No opposition at all. Where's America? You know, her beloved Israel has been taken over. No American response. When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw her wound, they run to King Jareb, the Assyrian, for help. That must occur after 1335. I want to look a bit more closely into all this, but it's interesting. But why do they run to Germany for help? Why do they run to the beast for help? If anything really, really serious happened in Britain, like somebody took out the Houses of Parliament and killed all the government or something or whatever, if a real major attack happened in Israel, I tell you what, the Americans would be in there with all guns blazing. But apparently not. So where's America? Where is America? Something happens, whether it's the financial crisis that we're looking at, but the power is broken, and it's been broken over the years. I mean, it's been broken in several of the wars that America's had, where they've really walked. I mean, they escaped from Vietnam. They didn't really win in Korea. They didn't really win in Iraq. Not in Afghanistan. It just goes on and on, on and on. Americans are getting killed. Billions of dollars are going down, and they're not solving the war. They're not winning. I suppose I could be cynical and say it's an ongoing war so the Americans can try all their latest toys, like the big bunker-busting bomb they used recently, the biggest non-nuclear weapon going, where you drop it from a great height and it penetrates 200-odd feet under the ground and then explodes and everything on top just caves in. So if you've got somebody with an underground factory, you can destroy it. Nice toy. Bit expensive. But then they can print as much money as they want, so there's not a problem. America's strength is aircraft carriers, 11 of them, I believe. Do you know how vulnerable an aircraft carrier is today? You just take one missile. And you know, it's kind of big. It's kind of a big thing to hit. Size of several football fields. They're massive, absolutely huge. 6,000 odd men, billions of dollars worth of aircraft, one missile. That's what Russia said recently. Somebody said to Mr. Putin, "You've not got any aircraft carriers." He said, "No, we've got the missiles that destroy aircraft carriers." The inference being that when I've destroyed your aircraft carrier, all my forces are still intact. You've lost all of yours. So the aircraft carrier 20, 30, 40 years ago might have seen a really, really, you know, great piece of equipment. Today it's becoming a liability, especially when six or seven of them, their nuclear reactors, are getting in need of replacement or repair or whatever, and they haven't got the money to do it. So it's a very interesting world. This is what we're leaving behind. You know, we here today are in the same basic position as, how can I put this? Tomorrow, we go into the feast. Tomorrow evening, the first service of the feast. We're here now in this society at that same moment in time. We're just about to see the kingdom of God being set up on this earth. Now, obviously, there's a few years involved. We know there's 3.5 years of tribulation. We know there's a period after Christ returns before the major, the final major battle. It's not far off. In God's eyes, it's probably like 15 minutes. With us, it may be 4 or 5 years. But we are today here just looking forward to tomorrow, the starting the kingdom of God. As mentioned in the sermonette. And it's important that we're coming out of this. You know, God says, come out from among us. We're ambassadors. We represent another government, right? It's a government of real clout. They don't have any aircraft carriers. They've obviously got a very interesting weapon that can destroy billions of people, hundreds of millions of people in one shot. Pretty powerful. It's another interesting situation. Got a problem internationally? Where do you get help? Well, you go to the Vatican. There you go. Pope Francis called on global leaders to join in on May 14, 2020 to sign a new global compact on education that will lead to a new humanism, whatever that means. He wants to educate all young people into becoming global citizens. Just remember that when that army attacks Christ, it's all nations. It's not just Gog and Magog and the European army that they are joined together. It's all nations. It says it several places in the Bible. All nations. These global citizens, that's what these people are trying to get. They're trying to get a government. They know the answer is one world government and they don't know how to do it. This is a trend to watch. The Pope offering to solve problems. This one is, if this doesn't wake our people up, then we're wasting our time. New World Order, the 2030 agenda. Somebody talking about another 11 years. Assembling in the United Nations headquarters in New York for the largest assembly of national representatives ever gathered in one place. The Pope stated that the defense of the environment and the fight against exclusion demand that we recognize a moral law written into human nature itself, which of course would be Catholic canon law. This is him talking to the heads of nations. In Laudato Si, which is, I presume, Latin, it states that the biblical tradition clearly shows, the biblical tradition, not commandment, clearly shows that this renewal entails recovering and respecting the rhythms inscribed in nature, in the law of the Sabbath. Sunday is meant to be a day which heals our relationship with God, with ourselves, with others, and with the world, stating that this day motivates us to greater concern for the nature of the poor. That, my friends, is the beast. That's the thing there. That's what we're waiting. This is what we've been waiting for. It's here. This is the mark of the beast. The Sabbath. Sabbath observance. He's pushing for it with all the nations on the planet. I wonder how many of our groups in the Church of God has picked this up. I can't see any other way of explaining that. Another lie. Global warming. Climate change. Oh. For more than 60 years, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or to the uneducated, NASA, has known that changes occurring to planetary weather patterns are completely natural and normal. But the space agency, for whatever reason, has chosen to let the man-made global warming hoax persist and spread to the detriment of human freedom. It was in the year 1958, to be precise, when NASA first observed that changes in the solar orbit of the Earth, along with alterations to the Earth's axial tilt, are both responsible for what climate scientists today have dubbed warming, or cooling, depending on which agenda you sort of look at. In no way, shape, or form are humans warming or cooling the planet by driving SUVs or eating beef, in other words. But NASA has thus far failed to set the record straight and has instead chosen to sit silently back and watch as liberals freak out about the world supposedly ending in 12 years because of too much livestock or too many plastic straws. Crazy. The latest twist. Eating meat could be banned like for smoking. One of Britain's foremost barristers has predicted, so he has called the offence ecocide. So next time you're just in a juicy steak this next week, I'm sure we'll all be having at least one. You are committing ecocide. You are responsible for global warming. You are responsible for the destruction of the planet. Oh, boy. If you don't think these people are nuts, listen to this one. A Swedish behavioral scientist has suggested that it may be necessary to turn to cannibalism and start eating humans in order to save the planet. As we say in the courts, I rest my case, my lord. Nutty as a fruitcake. We're all doomed. The sea is rising. 3 meters over the next 50 years. London inundated. New York completely flooded out. Millions displaced. Sea levels are not rising. The world's 76 best tide gauges. Now, they've got me all around the world. They measure the tides up and down, up and down, up and down. And they've been doing it for over 100 years. Okay? This is fairly reliable stuff. The new scientific paper affirms all the long-term trend tide gauges of the world consistently show a negligible acceleration since the time they started recording in the late 1800s, over 100 years ago. The sea levels are not rising based on that, right? But you know, people will believe anything. You get that little Greta, what's her name, getting up there in the front of the United Nations. You've stolen my future. She's proved to be a total nutcase, evidently. Several people have just come right up. Their medical records are a mile long. She's just being used and abused. On the other hand, the fires have started again in California. There's a massive category 5 hurricane type job. They call them in the Far East, Japan, they call them typhoons. But it's, if in equivalent terms, it's a Category 5 hurricane. It's hitting Japan. At the same time, they've had a 5.7 earthquake. So, you know, these things are happening. You know, we have all sorts of eco problems. We have billions of liters of radioactive water from the Fukushima plant. They're now going to dump it in the sea. Now, it will have one good effect if you're a salmon fisherman, because you go out fishing at night. You'll be able to spot them because they'll all glow in the dark. They'll be radioactive. Aren't we wonderful? We destroy everything we put our hand to. It's crazy. Can't go without looking at mixed up mankind, can we? God created us male and female. Now you can, we have chaos. You can be whatever gender you want. John Hopkins professor, this guy's finished. I think he's going to be hung out to dry. Doctors don't have evidence that the treatment will be the right one, he told an outlet during a phone interview. Many people are going down to what amounts to an experiment on these young people without telling them it's an experiment. You need evidence for that, and this is very serious treatment. It's comparable to doing a frontal lobotomy. Very popular, I believe, in late Victorian times. They opened up and take part of the front of the brain out, and it turns you into a moron. quite incredible. Quite incredible. Thousands now of these people who've gone through gender change want to go back. NHS, National Health Service bosses in England have warned nursery staff against referring to boys and girls, saying gendered language can lead to violence and even murder. Well, I raised four kids and I didn't see the occasional bit of violence, but there was no murder. But they were boys. last night, however, Piers Shepherd of the Family Education Trust criticised the move, saying parts of this have a very authoritarian tone, such as challenging parents if they use the wrong terms. Talking about violence ending in murder is very extreme. This seems to be a thought-policing attitude. Oh, yes, it is. It's controlling minds. Another article here. Hundreds of young trans people trying to return to their original sex. Kind of difficult if you've had bits removed to sew them back on. And then again, we have the women's lib thing, which is going out of control. This year's Global Religion Summit on Lake Constance, female delegates from Africa, Asia, and the Middle East made clear women must have a greater say. Yes, women rule over them. That's what they want. And whenever we get the balance wrong, it goes off track, and it's chaos. And this is what's happening here. The global economy. The double shock of global recession and a no-deal Brexit. There's two things going on here. Britain's constitutional crisis has hit before the next great spasm of Europe's intractable monetary crisis. Europe has a crisis about every 7 years. You can't make it work when you've got a country like Germany, which is highly industrialized, highly competitive, and brilliant, with the same basic currency as southern Italy, which is still in the dark ages. It doesn't work. That's what's happened to Greece. You know, they've been in a money basket case now for years. The Eurozone faces a Category 5 economic storm. It is structurally defenseless as the world slides in recession. This will not be an ordinary downturn because central banks no longer have the instruments to fight it. Mervyn King, when he was head of the Bank of England, he was telling people way back, this is what the banks could do. And the bottom line was quantitative easing. He said quantitative easing, in other words, printing money out of thin air, is the last thing they can do. There's nothing else they can do. They've been doing that now for some years. If there is an October election in the UK, and if it delivers a bigger Tory majority, as the polls suggest, EU leaders will have to decide whether to risk adding to the shock of a no-deal Brexit to all the other shocks hitting their industries. The double shock of a global recession and a no-deal Brexit may be more than Europe can withstand. Europe has got to collapse because you don't get a dictator rising out of good times. Dictators can only rise when there's great problems. You get the man who stands up, who's inspired, obviously. I have the answers. People follow him. Talks about the Goldilocks zone. He just says that the financial markets at the moment are just crazy. Nobody can explain what's actually going on. The trouble is, lately, banks lend money to each other on a daily basis, billions. And lately, they've been demanding higher and higher interest rates from their brethren. And the Fed has been has to jump in and start printing money again. Nothing much, about 100 million a week. And it just says, why can't four too-big-to-fail banks worth $5.45 trillion between them pay back a $53 billion loan? You know, that's like somebody on £20,000 a year having a £5 debt and not being able to pay it. It's crazy. And the Fed is printing and printing and printing and printing and printing. Here's the rub. Why is this happening? And this man here puts his finger on something that might be interesting. He says the implication to money market people is there is a big unknown counterparty risk out there and nobody wants to get caught in another Lehman workout. In other words, the big banks know there's something out there that's looking like it's going to go bang in a big way. It could be, for instance, Deutsche Bank, which shares have dropped from $70-odd each down to 50 cents over the last few years. It could be Credit Suisse, which is another one that's value is gone, completely gone. And these guys are handling the money around, 50 billion at a time. But one of them gets to sit on the chair and he doesn't get any. And nobody wants to be left sitting on that chair. You know musical chairs? Probably played musical chairs. Yeah. Nobody wants to end up sitting on that chair. It says, what would happen in an economic collapse? Well, to give you an idea, you would lose access to credit. Banks would close. Demand would outstrip supply of food, gas, petrol, other necessities. If the collapse affected local governments and utilities, water and electricity would no longer be available. As people panic, they would revert to survival and self-defense modes. And they would also riot and kill each other and so on. Demand for the dollar and the US Treasury would plummet. Interest rates would skyrocket. Investors would rush to other countries, such as the Chinese yuan, the euro, or even gold. It would create not just inflation, but hyperinflation, as the dollar becomes cheap as dirt. That's what happened to the Weimar Republic when you had a barrow load of cash just to buy a loaf of bread. When you bought a bottle of wine, back then you paid a deposit on the bottle. You bought a bottle of wine on Friday, you drank the wine, you went back on Monday, you got more money back on the bottle than you bought them on the previous day. Oh, we can laugh. But before we went down to South Africa in 1975, we had 25% inflation in this country. 25%. We were paying 10% interest on our mortgage. That's why we left the country. We just couldn't see it getting our head above the water. Now, what happens next? Wars, rumors of wars. Yep, we'll go along with that. We could see a major conflict in the Middle East. We could see a major conflict in the Far East as China wants to take over Taiwan. We could see a huge rise in food prices because there are shortages taking place right now. Quantitative easing could create hyperinflation. But you know, it talks about, you can just make a note of this because we're running out of time here. Matthew 20 verse 2, it talks about a laborer's wage is a penny a day. And Revelation 6 verse 6 says that basically a penny buys enough food for one meal for one day. In other words, there's food there, but it costs the earth. So enough food to survive for a day would cost a day's wages. We could see the US suffered a major attack by Iran or North Korea, whatever. Deuteronomy 28:25, make a note of it. The Lord will cause thee to be smitten before your enemies. You shall go out one way against them and flee seven ways and shall be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth, taken into national captivity, Britain and America. There are many events we haven't even looked at here. The Islamic invasion of European countries, food shortages, environmental disasters. US and Canada lost 3 billion birds in the last 30 years. Violent weather, consumers piling up debt. Mass shootings in the US, knife crime in the UK. But there's one last thing I want to cover. Perhaps the big event to watch out for is going to be a worldwide financial collapse. A devastating worldwide financial collapse. Prophecy 1, a sermon by Mr. Armstrong, 7th of July, 84. 70 years after the start of World War I. I can see now the event that is going to trigger the formation of the reunification of Europe. The resurrection of the medieval Roman Empire, and we've been looking forward to that, that is prophesied to come. I believe that some event is going to happen suddenly, just like out of a blue sky, and it's going to shock the whole world, and it's going to cause the nations of Europe to realize they must unite. Well now, I think I can see that this must be the very event is going to trigger, and that is the economic situation in the world, not just Europe. Now, when the financial structure breaks down, all civilization is going to break down. I just want to say that much. Maybe you can see how serious this can become. That would finally break the pride of America's power and Britain. The almighty dollar would go. The pound's already gone. The whole balance of power in the world could literally change overnight. Suddenly, it wouldn't be the American superpower. It would be Europe's superpower. It would build Europe in chaos, out of which would come a superpower, because they would then be under threat from China and Russia. Mr. Armstrong warned this financial collapse could force Europe together. And that's what we've been saying for a long time. They give their power and strength to the beast, not because they want to. Europe wants its identity kept. Yeah, but they got to. As he said, I can see now what's going to happen. Something's going to happen. It's going to happen suddenly. And when that financial structure breaks down, all civilization is going to break down. And that's going to happen before we flee. There'll be an answer to this, and then when that comes looking, getting organized, that's when the Europeans will go down into the Middle East. You know what? This is what God wants. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 4. Behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments, verse 5, even as the Lord my God commanded me. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nations, and which shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is wise and understanding people. That's our job coming up. This time it will work. The nations will look at Israel early in the millennium and they'll want to join Israel because they can see that Israel works and their nation doesn't. This is what we're looking forward to. Our job is to help make it happen. Think about that as we approach the feast.